Take two. Welcome to the Endurance Athlete Podcast. I'm Dan Schamberg, and back again with me is my co-host, Greg Hawkins, the comedic relief, as we were just saying a moment ago.
And, hey, you're the one that said the endurance athlete.
The athlete, yes. You know, endurance athletes also have nice asses, you know, because all the glute work that we do.
You can, I'm sure.
You can. This is a podcast. It's also a safe space for Greg and I, where we can chat with other athletes and hear unique stories from and get inspired from other athletes from a variety of endurance sports. And hopefully you get something out of it as well. On today's episode, we're joined with an amazing runner, a friend and former teammate of mine for the Badwater Salt and Sea, Kevin Hopp. Thanks for joining us.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Well, today we're going to dig deep. We're going to get in the dirt. I feel like that's something Greg would say quite often. And we're going to talk about the highs and lows that many athletes go through and how they use endurance sports as a, I think you said, kind of as a way to escape that, Kevin. We were talking a few minutes before. Basically, we're going to talk about mental health, which is very common in endurance athletes, whether you're elite or in the everyday runner. And it's something that's not always talked about. And Kevin, I don't know if either one of you have heard of a guy named, Guy Winch. He did a TED talk talking about practicing emotional first aid. And some of the things that he said, which I remembered, were that we favor taking care of our body more so than taking care of our mind. And, you know, if someone breaks a leg, you call 911. If you cut yourself, you grab a Band-Aid. It's instinctual. We do that. But if you're experiencing some sort of like rejection, failure, loss, or depressed, people just say, all right, shake it off. It's all in your head. Right. And so we pay attention to those, the physical injuries, but we don't really discuss those mental ones. And so I thought
absolutely
we would discuss that today, because Kevin, recently you've discussed a lot about your recent experiences with mental health, and I don't want to get into that. Just I'll let you kind of start that. But to get everyone started, Kevin, give us a background about how you got started in running, because you are a runner and ultra marathoner.
My first experience with running was in high school, and it was cross country to get out of doing water polo. I was pretty active in my youth, enjoyed, athletics.
Hold on. You quit water polo to run? Yeah. Man,
I was a swimmer. So I was a swimmer and I liked long distance swimming. And of course they wanted to put me in the pool for water polo. So, and I wanted nothing to do with it. So cross country was the sport to avoid water polo. And then graduating, going to college, getting married, job, got out of shape. And we're talking 20 years of no sports, athletics of any kind. And my daughter was about 6 years old in 2012, and she fell asleep on the couch, and I took her upstairs, was totally out of breath. And I said, I got to change my lifestyle. Otherwise I'm not going to see her on her 12th birthday or whatever, you know, those thoughts that go through your mind. And so the next morning got up and thought I was going to run a 5K, and I ran like five houses and turned around and came back home and was totally out of breath and was dead. But the next day I got up and ran six houses. And I literally, you know, now that I have a, you know, GPS watch, I ran the first run I ever did, and it was 0.1 of a mile, 1/10. That was my first run. And so every day I improved a little bit. It took me about, I don't know, 8 months to a year to be able to run a mile, but I just never stopped. And about 2 years after that first run is probably when I thought to get together with other runners and talk about running or whatever. And people were like, what do you do? And I'm like, I just go for a run. And they're like, how far do you run? I'm like, I don't know, 20 or 30 miles a day. And they just thought that was crazy. And I just thought it was normal. So I probably should have never talked to other people about running, because otherwise I'd probably be running 40, 50 miles a day by now.
Everyone told me I was running 20. You just started talking to the wrong people initially.
Yeah.
That's probably true. You need I found the wrong initial people. I did now find sort of a better tribe now.
Yes.
Talk to Andy.
Oh, Andy, Andrew Glaze.
Yeah.
I think he makes all of us look
I had a couple of good friends do the Cocodona 100 hours to finish approximately was their finish times on average for the four of them. That seems like a pretty good group for me to be in.
Yeah, there's a race that just happened this past week called the
Cocodona.
Cocodona 250 in Arizona. It's a 250-mile, it was an inaugural year, 250-mile trail run and ended up in Sedona. And Andrew Glaze did that. And I think you're right. He did it in, 96 or 106 hours, something like that there, which is a respectable time. It's a hard course from what I was able to see. But Kevin, basically on what you described is that you started your running career with the couch to stop sign program, but you just haven't stopped since then, you know, hence the nickname Hop Can't Stop. So if you're looking to Kevin on social media, it's Hop Can't Stop.
Yeah, that's hashtagger came around from a friend in Santa Barbara, went up and it was, I don't remember exactly, I think it was 2019. There was poor weather and all these trail races were being canceled because it was raining and, you know, code was like, okay, we can't have trail races in the rain because it'll ruin the trail. And so these trail races were getting canceled. And so the first weekend that it got canceled, I said, okay, we're going to go to Santa Barbara and visit some friends. And then we came back after that weekend. And then the second weekend, Crystal Cove, which was a 15K, got canceled in Orange County. But I looked up, I'm like, there has to be a race that's going on. So of course, when a 15K gets canceled, you sign up for 100K with 2 days prior to the event starting. So that's just felt normal. And I ran 100K that weekend and it was raining. And the best part of that race is I was running with a fellow runner and we probably got through, I don't know, the first 50 miles of the 100K. So there was about 12 miles left. And she starts talking about her son's teacher and ended up, I was a teacher at this time. And she started, and I knew exactly who she was talking about. Well, it comes to find out, I knew exactly who her son was because I taught her son in class and we got through 50 miles of the race and didn't figure out that I was her son's teacher until the last 12 miles, which is,
so, but you found out on mile 50 that you were running next to one of your kids' parents.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So and that's one of
if you're near done. And that's when I picked it up and dropped her. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things about ultra marathons, Greg, is that there's a lot of time going here to pass. And so when you're running with somebody or somebody, you get to know a lot about people generally. It's not something that happens, I don't think, on triathlons as you're riding on the bike. You're not sitting there chatting with people.
No, not well, not in my experience. No, it's very individual.
So Kevin, so you started running, you know, the couch to 5K ish and kept going on there. And you've done lots of, you know, hundreds, halves, trail runs, but some of the other accomplishments that you have recently in the last couple of years were not even race related. And one of them specifically was it 2019 or 2018, your 70 marathons in 70 days, correct?
It was 2019, yeah. And being a teacher at the time, the school year ended, and then, which was 1 week after the SD 100, completing that. So I sort of took that 5 days off. And on that Friday, the last day of school, I said, okay, it's a half day. I'm done at noon at working. I can run from noon to, you know, 4 o'clock, get a marathon in, and that'll be my first marathon. They'll celebrate the end of the school year. And I had counted the number of days I had off, which was 70 straight days. And I said, okay, I can run 70 marathons in the 70 days, which was great. But I forgot when school year starts that we start earlier for training. So that last week at the end of at marathon 60, 63, it got really hard because I was putting 8 hours of work in for like five of the marathons. And that's when it got hard. The rest of the time,
yeah,
it was
that's
pretty,
what I would say. Is, pretty simple. You know, getting work in.
The work problem. The
65th and through 70th marathon was probably when it would get hard for me.
Exactly.
I did a 5K every day in April, and I think I bruised my foot, and now I haven't ran since.
I mean,
you know, so I know where it's coming from, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. I will say running, it was very interesting. I'm not that same athlete perspective since 2019. Had some difficult times, and back then, I know it sounds odd, but it was just so easy to go out the door each day and run 26.2 miles. It felt like nothing. Honestly, it felt like, okay, it's like brushing your teeth. This is what I'm doing this morning, and got it done. And from some
except if you brush your teeth for 4 hours, your teeth will fall out.
I wasn't quite, you know, the metaphor.
Yeah, no, I get it. But, so you're in a good place to, and then you just went for
just went. Know,
26 miles.
There were, I will say, you know, with each block of 10, the first block of, let's say, 10, not really that big of issue, but after 10, there were some days that were more difficult, but there was so many people in the running community locally that knew what I was doing that would say, hey, do you need someone to run with or whatever? And sometimes, and I would say, yeah, sure. If you want to come out and run a few miles with me, great. I'll be up here and there. And then there were days that I was having a difficult time and I could just send a quick text to a few people and they were right alongside me within a half hour, helping me along if I was having a bad day. So I had a good support system all the way along that made it easier when days were hard.
I think that does bring up a good point about, like, you know, having, you know, I think a lot of people who do endurance athletes are very like internally motivated, but, sometimes you do need that external motivation, and it is nice to have like a support structure around you, like encouraging you and keeping you going and keeping you, like, you know, accomplishing your goals.
Yeah. And in fact, Kevin, I think quite a bit, we shared miles during your 70 days there as well. I think I can remember several throughout Leucadia. Absolutely. And it was always great because Kevin was like, I'm just going to take it easy. I'm just going to go at like a 9.5 minute mile pace. I'm like, hey, great. That's perfect for me. So Kevin wasn't trying to push it at all during these. He wasn't going for time. He was just getting the distance in, right? Which is a smart thing when you're running that much every day. Speed should not be a goal.
No. And it definitely wasn't at the time, but I look now at those times and it's like, I wish I could run 26 miles at those times, you know, even though it hasn't been that long ago, but things have changed and we'll get it back, you know, yeah. Ebbs and flow.
Now,
right.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. So as soon as that finished, so this is what, the end of August, 2019?
Yes.
And right after this, you, if I remember correctly, because you were working out with me regularly at that time, and your goal then, you were going to switch almost immediately after that 70 marathon, 70 days, till you start within like a month or two to your training for Boston for 2019. And you have a goal for Boston that you're still trying to accomplish, correct?
Yeah. I won't say I want to run a sub 3 marathon, and my PR right now at the marathon distance is a 3:06. I ran Boston in 2019 in a 3:09. But I don't think Boston is a course for me to, and we'll see what will happen when I do focus on that, because obviously I was closer back in 2019. And we'll talk more about, but with the pandemic and things that have gone on in my life, running for speed or for fast takes a lot of effort. And I had to put other effort, which we'll talk about, into other aspects of my life. So I still am running, but the speed workouts, the weights, the stairs, I had to sort of put that to aside, you know, training to aside, and just go out to enjoy the runs for what they are. And I'm now ready. I'm in an aspect of, okay, I can start to put these things back in to gain the speed back and to also enjoy doing the work of trying to run fast again.
Yeah. And so let's go ahead and kind of get to that. So after you run your 70 marathon, 70 days, and towards the end part of 2019, what happened after that?
So in November of 2019 is when things started to get more difficult. And that was, my family went to grandparents' house, my in-laws, and my father-in-law shared that he sees things that aren't there. And so we asked, talked, and he had a very open and honest, and he basically said it's been about a year-long process that he sees things, but he knows they're not there, so he just hides it. By December, at Christmas time, he stated, actually just called 911. He went to his bedroom, called 911. He thought his grandchildren were robbing the house, opening up their Christmas presents. He thought we were stealing from him. And immediately, he got diagnosed with a Lewy body dementia, which is sort of a medical dementia. Besides losing your abilities, your memory, his body was losing the ability to function. So we had to call 911 at one point to have basically his heart shocked to be able to beat again. So his brain was basically turning off his bodily functions. And that all happened from December to February, where he needed medical attention 24 hours, very, very quickly. And so realizing that in February of 2020, right before COVID hit, that's when he really needed full-time care. And it just sort of turned up, you know, our family's life at that point upside down of he needs full-time care. Someone needs to be there. Even though we were lucky enough to get him into a memory care facility, there was so much going on in terms of, you know, housing and so forth, selling their house, getting a house that they've spent a lifetime in, just going through that, that I ended up resigning from my job because it was a full-time job to take care of a family member. And in October of 2020, he passed. But I, at that point, that's when I really got really depressed, was the October, November time, because I felt like I had given up my life to help him through his end of life.
You were his full-time care from February through October?
Yes. Even though he was in a facility, memory care facility, and it was a great facility, but there's only so much they'll do if there's no one watching. So, you know, this is a person that doesn't know he's getting care, doesn't know. So if you're not there watching them, they don't do the work quite as well. So it was definitely something that he needed full care, and right. It was easier being there than not.
So like during a pandemic, you were in a memory care facility like every single day?
Basically, yes, because he was on hospice. So if you were a hospice, they had different rules for that, because he was at end of life. At least this facility allowed for care. I know other people have said, I know hospitals did not, because there was a few times he had to go to the hospital. We weren't allowed to visit, but the care facilities in California, I believe if they were under hospice, you were allowed to visit at end of life.
Wow. That sounds very emotionally straining.
Yeah. Now, during this time, were you, and I think I know the answer to this, but were you still running during this time, or were you able to get out and run? Because, you know, running and all a lot of these other athletic activities are supposed to, you know, make us happy and bring us joy, right? And you mentioned earlier before we started is, you know, that's one of the things you like about running is it's a little bit of an escape. It doesn't replace the things that happen to you, but it's kind of a way to get out and help deal with it.
Yeah. So I use my running for as a therapeutic, as a way out to deal with sort of the side effects of sort of a depression and so forth, to get the adrenaline rush. And I've been doing that for a long time for things that are stressful, nice stress relief, activity. But with Dave's passing, it really brought up a lot of issues that I hadn't dealt with in my own family. I haven't had anything to do with anyone in my family for 15 years now. And so Dave and Joyce, who are my in-laws, have basically become my, you know, parents also. So it wasn't just losing my father-in-law. It was like losing my father And then realizing that, oh, I still have a father, yet I, you know, there is that relationship will never be repaired. But it was the reality of that aspect also during this time. I continued running all the way till about March, April of 2020. So I was able to get out at first and run, but and I was on a run streak that started, I remember the start date was 12/14 of 2016. And it went all the way through till like April 1st of 2020. It was 1400 and some days of a run streak. And the average day was a half marathon when I quit. And I decided to quit. I had rules just like within races, when I plan races, like, why am I going to quit a race at whatever mileage if I feel, you know. So my rule was, if I ran 7 1-mile days in a row and I'm not physically injured and there's no reason to run a mile other than mentally not wanting to run, then the 7th one, that's my last one. And I did 7 1-miles like March 20th of 2020 to April. And I was just like, I'm done. It wasn't that I was done running, but I just found the run streak wasn't as motivating as, let's say, it had been in the past. And running wasn't giving me the highs that I had in the past. And I will say, whether mistake or not, because I was just in that downward spiral of what was going on in my life, and running became difficult rather than helpful. It became another thing that I had to do on my to-do list, besides taking kids to school or not taking them to school, figuring out the school situation, because by this point it was the start of COVID had started. And that was another reason to quit, because Santa Leo Hills area that I live in, there were park rangers out closing down the trails. You couldn't run outside, even if you were all by yourself, which still to this day seems totally stupid.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it was definitely, it was stupid then, and it's still stupid now.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic.
No public health official has come out and said, "Yeah, we were wrong. We're sorry about that. That was dumb." But yes,
absolutely.
That
time period was very stressful, and like having your leisure activity thing that you use to decompress causing you stress. But it's like the opposite of what you want to have happen right then. I could see why you would just be like, I got to put this down for a while.
Yeah. And for most of us who weren't even going through what you were going through, Kevin, you know, I felt the stress during that time where they were shutting sidewalks and I couldn't run down the sidewalk in Encinitas and things like that. So to have that put on top of what you're going through, yeah. I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So I ran anyway.
Oh, don't get me wrong. We still ran and moved all the barricades and kept going, but
yeah, still 100%. I still got out there and ran, but it was just sort of like, should I be doing this? Should I not? Well, mental health wise, even, you know, I got out there and ran, even though it was sort of frowned upon at the beginning of COVID, but just not as often as I used to. So my mental health really took a slide, but I did keep going and running when I could, but it wasn't giving me the pick me up that it used to give me. So I will, even though I enjoyed running, I had stopped to a minimal about that March, April of 2020. And really my mental health slid during that time. I won't say it slid completely. I just think it was an issue of like, okay, I have other things in my life that I need to deal with that were struggles. When your primary care for, you know, your father-in-law, and it's not just the care, it was dealing with the financial side of, they're selling their home now because they're no longer living there. And you're the one who's responsible for finding, you know, the people that are going to go through. You know, okay, we're getting rid of all the furniture, how are we donating it, and, you know, so forth.
Yeah.
Things that you never thought you would be doing. So, and then dealing with that sort of end of life stuff was difficult. So it's not a complete, you know, lack of running, but running just became something that wasn't as important or gave me the joy that it used to. And that's sort of like running, I would say I probably changed from running daily to running 3 days a week. And instead of 13 miles a day, it was 3 miles a day. And that probably went on. I mean, I was getting like, for me, that's someone who's used to running 400, 500 miles a month. I was getting like 200 miles a month, which most people would think was a ton of mileage. But for me, it didn't feel like much. When you're used to running 100 miles a week, 200 miles a month felt like nothing. And I continued doing 200 miles a month all the way till basically Dave passed away in October. And then that whatever, that spun me. And I lowered my kept lowering my mileage. And I actually sort of stopped running in December. I'm going to try to pick up my miles a little bit. And when I picked up the miles in January, I felt better about it. And then February, I just said, I just got to keep going. And that's when there was a couple things that had gone on. I sought a therapist to help me deal with the root cause, where not that running ever, I ever felt like was, you know, I was dealing with the root cause. I was just dealing with, it was a tool that I used to deal with the depression. Where now with therapy, I'm still seeing my therapist, and I felt like the running became more of a tool instead of actually trying to cover up the depression. And I think having that therapist, you know, to help me work on what is the main problem with my depression, and having the running be more of the tool, I found the enjoyment in running again. And by February, I picked up the mileage, and it's just been a slow recovery back to enjoying running. Because when you sort of take that time off or cut those miles down, when you pick them up, which I do, it took a while to feel that love again. So
that's an interesting point you make there about the running being a tool there. I wouldn't have thought about that in that perspective. But going back to the beginning parts of the 2020, is what you say was like, when did you first start to feel like the signs of depression, right? Or is it something that you even recognized until later on?
I would say the first signs were end of March, early April. I would say that was sort of the first signs where I realized I was no longer teaching. I had resigned from my teaching position in February to take care of father-in-law. And making that realization of, hey, something that I've spent 20 years, you know, perfecting my craft as a teacher is something I'm no longer doing. And I know taking care of my father-in-law for the rest of my life isn't going to be a career choice that I have the option of. So I think when that loss was sort of identified, you know, March, April, and it wasn't necessarily that the identity loss was a big part of the depression. But I think, as I stated, me not being around, having a relationship with my parents and identifying it was also something that led to the spiral of not really coping positively with that breakup relationship with my own parents. So that's where therapy has really helped. I think I ran to cover
up. Gone back to teaching?
I don't plan on it. No, I have not gone back to teaching. And that's not my plan right now.
Yeah, I mean, imagine it would be difficult anyway because of the whole, you know, teaching during coronavirus. That's probably not something that most teachers want to even deal with, the online and the partial school days, let alone, you know, everything else that everyone's having to go through right now. But Greg, and jump in anytime with any questions you have. I'm just trying to, things that come to my mind here. So you're doing this running and you're taking care of your father-in-law. Did you talk to other runners about this, or did you reach out to anybody before reaching out to a therapist? Did you have I'm thinking about what other athletes can do here, the ways that other athletes can get help. Did you reach out to anyone? Were you able to talk about it with people?
So when I realized I was depressed was around when Dave passed away, which was October, November. Well, at that point, you know, with the pandemic, I think everyone was, hey, the mental problems that everyone has. blah, 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 whatever you want to put to that. I originally sought to find a therapist back in November. And part of it was how deep a depression I was in, that I don't want to name the business, but I was on hold for like 2 hours to just get an appointment time. And I was in such, I can hold forever because I have nothing going on in my life right now. And then once I got through to the secretary or whatever, whoever was making the appointments, the appointment time, and this was November, they're like, our first appointment is in January. And I'm like, I could be dead by that point, you know, is what I, you know, went through. If this depression keeps going, I could be completely 6 feet under by January. So I just said, never mind, you know, other people need more help than I do. I'm just, you know, I'm a strong enough person. I'll get through this or whatever. And I felt like my depression wasn't as bad as someone else's. So I felt if this is the wait time, then, you know, I don't need to be in front of someone else. And so I wasn't seeking any advice from anyone else at that point, but I probably went a good month, 30 days. And I'm like, I'm not getting any better. I went and saw my personal physician, my medical doctor. She prescribed drugs. And I said, well, maybe that's what I need. So she prescribed an antidepressant. I took that antidepressant for 30 days. It helped, but at the same time, I felt ridiculous about taking an antidepressant without anyone overseeing the medication. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's when I said, I need a therapist. And I started reaching out to the running community. I know other people are seeing therapists. Anyone have a recommendation? So when I was on a run, you know, with a friend that I've known for years, I'd say, hey, look, I know I'm going through a difficult time. I need a therapist. Do you have a therapist? And, you know, or do you know a therapist? And so I was really taking names. And I did that for like a week. And I probably got like 14 names and of therapists. And I ended up calling them. And I got in with one that I'm really, really happy with. And that's been helping me ever since basically the start of the year, about February.
Leave it to a group of runners to know a bunch of therapists, because, you know, people think we're crazy anyway, right? Like, because of what we do, and to some extent, people are right. But that's a whole different story. Now, that's interesting that, you know, about the drugs, and that's something that is very common. But like you said, when you think about it, that just is like a Band-Aid over the problem. It's not doing anything to fix the problem there. And there's that whole like, oh, we don't have an appointment to January. Was that, do you think, because of the coronavirus, or is that just because they weren't
doing what they needed? I don't know what happened there, but with that, basically my insurance is through Scripps, and this company is who Scripps uses for mental health. And so I think it's just, you know, one large institution, Scripps Health, passing, you know, this is where all our patients go for mental health. So I think that was sort of the issue, where currently I'm seeing someone who doesn't take my insurance. You know, so that is a difference, but I feel like this is important. Like you've said, you break your leg, you get a cast, you put it in a cast, you know, cut, you put a Band-Aid on your cut, you let it heal. A brain injury is like, just shake it off, let's go. And I have realized that I have a brain injury and I need to treat that injury and come to, you know, it's a long-term, you know, just like when a runner gets hurt, they could be out for a year. And that's sort of, I feel like with the mental side of things, that this is going to take quite a long time to go through. But even though it's going to take a long time to go through, I already feel like I have the tools to be able to deal with. I definitely say my biggest problem, and I think this is why runners, especially ultra runners, is I have a hard time being still. And I need to take that time to be still to address you know, the root causes of, and to have feelings of what I'm dealing with, instead of, oh, run and get the adrenaline rush and never really deal with the root cause and be mindful of that root cause of, you know, what's causing pain mentally.
So do you, Kevin, do you think you were using running in the beginning to like paper over or just mask the underlying issue?
Absolutely. Probably from the very beginning of starting, I started to run and continued to run because it made me feel good. And maybe at the point in 2012, when I started running, we may not have called it, you know, a depression, or I wouldn't have recognized it as, oh, I'm covering up or treating depression symptoms. But as I realized through this low currently, that's definitely what I use running for, to get that adrenaline rush. Because I will say I get a bigger kick from running than I ever got from the 30 days that I decided to take the prescription drugs. I only took the drug that was prescribed by my doctor for 30 days, but I do think that helped me get to the point where I was comfortable in talking to others about needing help. Because before I felt like, oh, I'm not as bad as everyone else, I don't need help, blah, blah, blah. But I will say, I realized when I wasn't getting out of bed for 24 hours that that's not me, type of thing.
Right.
So
now you've switched over to using running as more of a like tool or a reward rather than.
I am more mindful of what I'm using running for, where before it was like, oh, I'm not feeling great, I'm going to go out and run to feel better. Where now I'm more aware with, okay, yes, I could run to feel better, but I need to stop and be more mindful about why I'm feeling the way I am, and get and be aware of what's causing those feelings where I want to go run, or I need to be more active, whatever, if it's not running, I need to be more mindful of what's causing that need to go do an activity.
That's interesting take on it. Because I do use running, but I run for some of those similar reasons. But I feel like I use that time because I, just like you, I can't sit still, I can't meditate. So I run, and then that's when I kind of try to process through the day. Sounds like that's more where you're at now. I don't know that I've ever gotten like a runner's high, so maybe I'm not running far enough.
No, because I say this all the time. Whoever these people are that talk about runner's high, I don't know who these people are. Like,
yeah, I've never. I think Kevin maybe
a runner's high. I've experienced a I'm done running and I'm glad because I'm exhausted and this was painful. I've never a runner's high sort of feeling, and maybe that's what it is. Like, oh, I'm glad to be done. It's so euphoric, but
no, I feel like it's not really for me the runner's high necessarily, but I definitely feel like a clear mind running has definitely helped me clear my mind or cleared the stress of a day or, you know, for me. So I guess I consider that my runner's high, is that clearness that I get after a run or that I feel during a run.
No, I agree with both of you. When I do my runs, that's when I also, and I think a lot of people listening, whether it's cycling or whatever it is that you're doing or swimming, there's a lot of time there where it's just you doing whatever you're doing. So that's a great time to process things that have happened to you. Think about the things that are affecting you, plan and adjust of what you're going to do. And I will look up every once in a while and run, I'm like, oh, wait a second, I just ran 4 miles and I don't, just like when, if you're driving, this has happened to before, I don't remember how I got here, you know, cause I was so focused on what I was thinking about and basically doing that meditation, as you were calling it, Greg. And you were so focused on that you were just doing it while you're running. The running was a way to distract your body maybe. And that will allow your mind, you to focus on what's going on in your mind.
Kevin, going back to your at 2019, like after you finished that school year, do you think the 70, Do you think the I'm going to do this, you know, this insane, from my perspective, like challenge of 70 marathons in 70 days. Do you think that was coming from like a healthy place, or now looking back, knowing what you may have been suppressing, do you think you were taking on that challenge because you were distracting yourself?
Knowing what I know now, I think all of my running, and that's where I have to be careful, is to distract myself from difficult feelings. So I do definitely think that I planned, oh, I'll do these 70 marathons so I don't have to deal with X, Y, or Z. So yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily the whole truth now today, but I am more, what am I distracting my, why am I going on this run? What else is a priority in my life that I should be doing?
I think that's a great point, Greg and Kevin. You know, when you're doing something, you decide like, I'm gonna do 70 miles, 70 marathons, 7 days, or even if it's I'm gonna train for a 50K or a marathon or whatever it is, why are you doing this? Is it because you want the challenge to see what you can do, or is it to avoid doing something else? So you're distracting yourself with doing this, or you know, maybe it's a combination of the both.
Right.
Those things, the distraction as well as the challenge, which I think fits, you know, a lot of people here who
these things. Not to make light of it, but you know, when we were talking about when I was recapping our like any one of it's like essentially any one of these episodes to my wife, she essentially looks at me and goes, "What are you all crazy? Like, why would you do that?" She's not an endurance athlete, obviously, so she doesn't like understand like, you know, why we tell ourselves we do this. But I think we do a lot of times. We're out of the house because, you know, it's easier to go run 26 miles than it is to, you know, like deal with the thing that you don't want to deal with. But I think go ahead.
For me, I think the reason why I like the 100-mile distance is my upbringing. I had every comfort that was, you know, could be given to a child. In terms of materialism, there wasn't much physical or, you know, emotional support. But in terms of materialism, if you performed well, you got X, Y, or Z, whatever the prize was. And as a child, you know, it was very much contrived, you know, non-difficult things, you know, do well in school, you know, and I was fortunate to be able to do that. I think I see myself doing these endurance things to feel the pain that I, you know, may have had in my real life by not having emotional support. So I feel like I've transferred some of, you know, this endurance sport into how much physical pain can I take and still overcome and get through. And I find, you know, that's probably why I really do these endurance activities, to see what I can handle, you know, physically and emotionally, because obviously most of it is a mental overcome rather than a physical overcome in these endurance.
Yeah, I think you're right. The physical thing is usually a short-term thing that can be fixed unless you've, you know, fallen and broken an ankle or something like that. It's, you know, physically you're exhausted, physically you've overworked a muscle, but mentally is where you give up, right? Where, for example, my first 100, before we started, you said that you failed your first San Diego 100 and finished your second. And that's the same with me. I quit the first San Diego 100 at mile 88 the first time I did it. And I could, at that point in the course of it, I could see the finish line from where I stopped. And I was hobbling at that point because I pulled the muscle, but it was one of those things, well, all right, I still have 10 hours to hobble 12 miles, you know, but like, I don't want to do this. Like mentally, like, I'm done, right? I could have pushed through and done it and finished within the 32 hour time limit. It would have been painful, but mentally I could have done it. And when I quit, it was more
physically, like, you could have done it, but mentally, right, you were done.
Right, physically I could have done it, but mentally I was like, screw this, I'm done.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to do it anymore. And in fact, when I do Big Dogs Backyard Ultra, 2017, 18, and 19, looking when I finish and decide to tap out at, you know, 26, 28 hours, I'm thinking, I'm physically, I can't do anymore. I'm done. I'm at the end of my physical rope. I can't even do anything. Within an hour later, I think, fuck, like, why did I do that? It was a temporary moment of weakness. And I let that get the better of me, where I could still walk. I could still have completed the four loops, 4 miles in an hour. So that mental aspect, I think, is a huge thing of why we do these things, going back to Kevin's original point.
In going to the SD 100, the San Diego 100 in 2018, when I DNF'd at mile 65, I started to have honestly, physical pain. And I wanted to drop at the aid station at mile 30. And I said, no, this is the first aid station. I made a rule. I make it to the next one. And then that's when I'll drop. Well, I obviously made it through double, you know, probably five more aid stations before I got to mile 65 and hadn't quit. But I was, you know, by mile 65, I had been fighting myself from quitting. And I'm like, okay, I made it five aid stations. I thought I was going to quit at 30 miles ago. But it was so similar to like your 1 hour. The minute I quit, this relief came over me. And I'm like, I wasn't done. If the relief felt this good just by handing over my bib to the race director and saying I'm done. And I mean, it was immediate relief, where I probably could have ran another 150 miles right after that, you know, is how good I felt when I said I'm done. And that was the most disappointing part that made sure when I went back in 2019 that I was finishing, because unless I had a broken bone or something like that, where it was an actual physical, there was no way I was going to let the mental aspect in 2019 get the best of me. Because that's what it, you know, I think that's something you learn with any of your first time thing.
Yeah. And I've had to put those sort of rules, you know, implement those for myself, that says, all right, if I physically finish, we'll say Big Dogs, right? If I get a lap, if I ever get to go back there, I will start the next lap and go until either I don't make it in the cut. They have to kick me off the course now in order to not finish. So if I can physically walk, I will do that. Until they say, no, you can't go any further because either you timed out or you can't go any further. And that's something that I think you only learn by doing initially.
Yeah.
Well, you learn when you fail, I guess, to say.
I think that's something that I have learned more from my failures than any successes I've had through endurance running.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's a good point. Now, this is a question I was going to ask towards the end here. So what is your biggest accomplishment in running, and what do you think is your biggest failure? Greg,
you can think of this too. My biggest accomplishment is actually that day two, after running to that stop sign five houses down the street, I got up day two and I tried to go further. I really think that's my biggest accomplishment of when running was like, why am I doing this? Sort of thing. And I should be able to run further or faster. You know, when you first start out, you have all these things of what you should be able to do. And none of those were reality in realizing that, but I was still brave enough to get up the second, third, fourth day. So I think to be brave enough to start was probably my biggest accomplishment that I see. The SD 100, it was a failure, obviously not finishing in 2018, but I don't really see it as a failure, because I felt that was one of my biggest learning moments. So it's hard. And when I look at other things like not breaking 3 hours in the marathon prior to 2020, I looked at, oh, I didn't have proper nutrition. You know, when you look back on things, I see it as a learning curve of, I needed this, you know, new practice nutrition. I need to practice taking more fluid if it's a hot day, because obviously that takes care of things. So I can't really say that it was a failure, but I look at those as more of learning opportunities rather than So it's hard to say, but I guess if I was going to say biggest failure, I would go with that DNF in SD100. But it led to so many positive things that it's hard to look at that as a failure.
Yeah, and that's a great point, that don't look at it as a failure, look at it as a learning opportunity. And unfortunately, even though you finished the San Diego 100 the second time, you won't get to go back this year. If you are listening already and you don't know, we had Angela and BJ on a couple months ago talking about their extreme hope and for the San Diego 100 to go on this year. But we just found out a week or two ago that due to decisions by some rangers and some park services somewhere, despite all the information that they gave them, that they canceled the race for 2020 rather than move it, because it would interfere with a bunch of other events that were going on locally. So for now, 2 years in a row, there won't be the San Diego 100. But before I go on, Greg, what about you? Do you have a big accomplishment?
No, just running, just being able to get out the door is an accomplishment every day. And every day, don't do it. I try not to beat myself up too much about it.
Okay. What about a big failure or learning experience, as Kevin puts it? I've got one for you, but I'll let you go first.
You go, and I'll think.
I would say your biggest
more. More than something off the cuff.
All right. Well, Kevin, you're going to have to do this event with us this year. We're going to do it in July. I think, Greg, your biggest failure or learning experience was coming second to me in the Carlsbad Beer Mile.
I've been training it every year. Every year I come second or third.
Well, this year I think we're going to have it in July after I do the Vol State, and I'm not going to run because at that point I'm going to be trashed. So
what?
But we'll talk about that later.
It can't be an accomplishment if you're not competing against me.
But you wouldn't be competing against me at my best, and I don't want that to take away
from a
potential win for you. Now, Kevin, you were going back to the San Diego 100, and we talked about with Angela and BJ, one of the best things about these sports, Greg, you can tell me how it is with triathlons. Runners and triathletes kind of don't get along. We think you're not personable. You're kind of a-holes, that sort of thing. A $6,000 bike, really, is that necessary? Is a $200 pair of shoes necessary too? I don't know.
I feel like you're trying to start a fight, but like, I don't really get this like animosity.
No, I have nothing but love for you. But Kevin, so part of the thing with ultra running and trail running and triathletes, if they have feelings, is the group aspect, right? The social aspect, the support you get from the other runners out there. Kevin, how do you think that the group or the social aspect of our sport helps with or can help with the mental struggles that we go through? You think it's a good support system?
It is hard in that sense because no one wants to talk about the mental side of why they're running. So, as I think we all, especially in the trail community, I think, and especially endurance in general, when you're, why are you going to run a 50 miler or a 50K? You aren't going to have that runner's high after 26.2 miles, that's for sure. In the sense, if you get a runner's high. So the point of doing those longer distance, I do think there's people that are, using it as a tool to help with, to help them mentally. So I think there's a lot out there, but it's not talked about. So you sort of have to, you have to be willing to open up that door. And it's interesting. Once I sort of opened up that door and I hate, it was amazing. The community around me, it's like, oh, I have that too, and so forth. It wasn't that I was special or had anything different. Even on a run tonight, actually, before this friend opened up, who had her mother pass away from dementia at the same time as my father passed away. So it was sort of that same, I'm not unique in this situation sort of thing, but I don't think it would have been something she would have shared off the cuff, in that little group setting. run if it wasn't for me starting the talk and knowing what it was like to go through. So I think it's helpful to be out there in the run community and just be open up to say, hey, I've had these problems, because it does get other people to open up about their problems and feel comfortable. So I think it's very helpful, but I find it more on a trail than on the road. Road groups like to do their speed thing.
Yeah, I mean, I just think in general, people have difficulty talking about mental health issues, regardless of what setting you're in. But yeah, I could imagine the setting does make a difference. It's pretty difficult to talk if you're trying to like do, you know, like a sprint set. I guess like a trail run, when you're more relaxed and you're, you know, in a nice, beautiful environment, it makes it a little bit easier to open up.
Yeah. Maybe we should start every group run. Kevin, we'll put a group together. Greg, all of us put a group together. And before every run, we stand in a circle and we say, hi, my name's Dan and I run because XYZ. Right? Or I'm running today because XYZ.
And I'm a runaholic.
You know, yeah, that gets,
I don't know how I say that jokingly,
but I think that would actually be,
I don't know how deep you actually get, when you force people to do those exercises, but, you go ahead, Dan.
See, now I'm going to make an appropriate joke, and I've learned because I've been married for 13 years not to, to say those things, but, so we'll just move on from that. So I think you briefly covered this, Kevin, and we'll kind of, you know, finish up with a couple questions here. And Greg, if you got anything to add, by all means. How do you look at running now, Kevin, compared to you, to other than just a tool? Like, how has your perception changed over the last year and a half?
I would, and this is sort of, I don't mean it to come across like I've always encouraged other people's running, and always been supportive of other people, but I didn't have the perspective that other people have difficulties running. When I started running in 2012, and yes, as a newbie runner, it took me a while to get my, you know, running legs. But once I had my running legs, I could run, you know, 50 miles in a day. It was not a big deal. So seeing people going out and running, you know, let's say a 4 mile, and they wanted to run 5, and they were quitting and walking at mile 4. And I'm like, I thought you wanted to run 5 miles. And they're like, I'm not feeling well. I, of course, was supportive. And I'm like, you know, great, you got 4 miles in. But in my back of my mind, I'm like, what's better, another mile? So I didn't have that. Yes. In the back, I would never mention that to anyone or say that to anyone, but I thought it. I'm like, how, if they wanted to run 5 miles, why are they quitting at 4? It didn't make any sense to me until this, you know, post-COVID, where it was like, I would go out and run, and I thought I would run, you know, a 10 miler, and I was done at mile 5, you know? So I've gotten back to where I can, but I have more of an understanding of where people think they're going to go out and run or cut it short. I understand why people cut their runs short now, which I had no understanding pre, you know, 2020. So that I would say is the biggest thing I've learned.
Yeah. And now you're not cutting
on the short. If you were to say that to my wife, she'd be like, cause it hurts. Like, I'm stopping cause it sucks. Like, that's why.
I think my wife would say the same thing. And what I was going to say, Kevin, to your point about stopping, for me these days, and we all know this, like when you're running, there are just days that your body says no. Right. And rather than not run at all, I will at least start the run, because sometimes if you feel good, you just, you keep going and you finish your run and like, oh, I'm glad I did that. But if it's not my day, I know within the first 20 steps, right? And so it's not going to be, I'm going to go out for 4 or 5 and stop at 4. It's, I'm going to go out for my 5. I'm going to stop at 20 steps because all of a sudden I realize I'm done. This is not going to happen.
I'm not going to waste those 4 miles. That's good about having 2 outs, right? Of like, if I don't feel good to run, I'm like, I'm going to ride the bike. And if my legs hurt, I can just go swim.
Makes sense.
So you have no excuse, Greg, basically is what you're just telling me. You're lazy.
That's right. Because I laced up my shoes last night and I'm like, okay, the alarm's going off, I got to get out the door. And I took the first step and like, my foot really hurts. And I got on the bike instead.
All right. Well, at least you just say you don't have an excuse there. All right, Kevin, what would you give advice to anybody, runners or endurance athletes? We'll go, you know, with that since that's the theme here, to who might be not feeling right or things are changing with their running or they're not sure if they're depressed or not. What would advice would you give? Now, I'm not going to give any advice because everyone knows that I'm not a doctor and no one should take advice from me unless it's about strength training, in which case.
I definitely feel that way. Like one, when you're able, like today I ran 24 miles. I don't think it's good for, and yesterday I ran 20 miles and so forth. And this is my 15th week of a minimum of 100 mile weeks. So 15, and I plan on doing 26 of them. So in terms of running advice, advice in general, no one should take anything from me. But if you're feeling off and don't understand why, I think it's definitely time to reach out to look for a professional, find someone. And will state, 100%. The first person you see, it's sort of like dating. You're not going to like the person, probably the very first one. Go find someone else. Just break it off. Don't waste your time. Find the therapist or a professional that helps you. And you can't expect, you know, your best friend to solve your mental health problems. So you definitely should seek a professional. And asking though your best friend who they see, maybe not in those terms, but do you know of anyone? 99% of the people out there, I think, knows someone that has, you know, sought help and knows of a referral that they can refer you to.
That's good advice. There are resources out there. You don't have to deal with it all on your own.
Absolutely.
I think that's a great point. All right. I've got two more questions for you, Kevin, and then we'll let you go. Who are three influential people to you?
I think number one, obviously, after 25 years of marriage and seeing my wife go through her ups and downs, and especially it was her father who passed away, and seeing how, I don't know, how strong, whatever you'd want to say, she's unbelievable. So she's my most influential person, just being able to see how she handles things and moves forward and deals with the emotional of whatever it happens to be, of helping raise our two children way more positively than I would. Thank God she's here to calm me down. And I'm sure you can relate to that too, Dan. So that's my number one. I would say in terms of running influences, I don't really have one. I have found that more of less with running, I just need to do my own thing and not worry about what anyone else does. Or I don't find any one thing what works for one person doesn't work for everyone. So I don't really have a running influence there.
That's great. I think that's a great perspective on that, by the way.
And I think when we start, I mean, there are people that I think are amazing runners. It's not that, but I don't look at them to go, oh, how will that influence my running? I just think we're all individuals in that set.
That's a very healthy thing to say, Kevin.
So we'll see. I sort of follow it. However, you know, there are things that, I'd really love to do that type of thing, like so-and-so did, or, you know.
Oh, but of course.
In terms of how they got to where they're at, I don't think I could do the same things as anyone else.
No, I think that brings me kind of to my last question is, what's next for Kevin Hopp? Hopp can't stop.
So my next race that's actually a race is Nanny Goat, which is, for me, it's going to be a 12-hour race out in Riverside. It's basically, in terms of something you'll understand, it's like a Pirate's Cove endurance race. So it's a 12-hour race. I think the loop is like 1.1 mile loop on a farm in Riverside. My plan is to do, and that's what you've been seeing, you know, if you follow me on Strava, is 10 minute miles for the 12 hours. My goal is to get 75 miles in. I think the 12 hours at the 10-minute mile pace will get me somewhere around 72 miles. So if I feel good at hour 10, I plan on picking that pace up so I can get 75 in, and you know, get 15 miles in at the, in the last 2 hours,
which should be 24 hours, correct?
It's a, it's going to be a 12-hour race.
Oh, 12 hours. Sorry. 12 hours. So, wow.
12 hours. Okay. So I'm planning a 10-minute mile pace and we'll see what happens, from there.
Okay. So that would give you 72 miles in 12 hours. So if you're feeling good, you're going to push for the
70. If I feel good at 10 hours, hopefully I'll still be at that pace. And if I'm feeling good, I'll pick up the pace for the last 2 hours.
And if not, just do the best you can, right?
Do the best I can and get as close as possible.
This is a trail run?
It is on trail. Someone owns a large piece of property, private piece of property in Riverside, and they open up their farm out in Riverside, and you basically run around a whole bunch of cows and chickens for hours on end.
Are these the same people that were going to do the, they call it the Sisyphus Backyard Ultra?
I don't think so.
Okay. That was
large stones or something.
No, just well, a local.
We may pick up stones to count our laps. I don't know how they'll count the laps around the farm, but maybe by putting a stone on the ground.
Well, Kevin, you know, you are an inspiration to a lot of people with what you do. You know, if people want to kind of check up on you and follow what you're doing, what's the best way to do that?
If they're worried about just running and how far I get and see how many 100-mile weeks I get to, which my goal right now is 26 of them, I'm on week 15. The easiest way to see that is Strava and then just searching my name, Kevin Hopp. And it's Hopp is a very unique name. So I don't think there's very many of us out there. So you should be able to find me there. And then on Instagram, it's just Hopp Can't Stop. So that's pretty easy to find.
Nicknames right there.
Yeah,
made, and it's also, you know, you do a lot with, I know you used to do a lot with what's that brand, with the bunny rabbit,
rabbit Ryan and rabbit. I love rabbit gear. I am still, it works, and I'm no longer, I was an ambassador for the gear. Their application process happened right around, let's say, the start of my, and I'm like, I don't really need any more gear. So I didn't apply to be an ambassador this year. So we'll see if I go back to that. But currently, in all the things that have changed, which I don't even know if you're aware, well, I did share with you, Dan, but I am coaching running right now through Junior Mavericks. So, which is,
oh,
like,
no, you didn't. That's awesome.
It's a K through like eighth grade program. I mostly deal with middle school students and coach that. And then I have a job currently part-time just working at Fleet Feet. So I'm having fun dealing with just running full-time. It's what it's about. So I'm enjoying that new sort of aspect and just doing things I enjoy doing. So my whole life is about running right now. So
that's great.
And I'm enjoying it.
That's awesome. Greg, anything you want to finish off? You know, I know you're not on social media. We won't talk about that anymore.
Yeah. Speaking of mental health, you know, maybe get off the social media. It might help a little bit. But yeah,
I did take a break from social media.
What's that?
I did take a social media break for when it started. I did not need that noise. So I did take a break from it. So it is a healthy thing to do, is take a break from social media.
I agree. I've been on a 13-year break from social media.
I think social media is only like 12 years old.
Yeah, right? No, but I do really appreciate you, Kevin, and your openness, you know, talking about your mental health issues. I think there's a lot of stigma that is attached to that. And I think people would benefit greatly if that stigma was lessened. So thanks for talking about that.
Sounds good. You're welcome.
Wow, that was very nice and well thought out, Greg. I'm proud of you.
Fuck you, Dan.
I couldn't have done it any better myself. But no, I agree with that sentiment, Kevin. Like I said, we've been friends for a couple of years now and have done a lot together. So I appreciate you being willing to talk about this. Cause when I first thought, you know, about talking to you, I was like, this is something that I think would be a challenge. And I didn't even know if you even wanted to talk about it, but I saw that you were going through some things. And I thought, I think a lot of people would benefit from hearing something like this, just for the fact that I realize that they're not alone. So
100%.
So thank you, Kevin, for agreeing to talk with us about this. We'll have to get out in some runs. We both skipped stairs yesterday. So Mark Robinson, a mutual friend of us, said, hey, you didn't run the stairs. I was like, I forgot to set my alarm there. But I appreciate everyone listening to the Endurance Athlete Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Give us a rating, which helps more people find out about what we're doing. You can also join our Facebook group, The Endurance Athlete, on Facebook groups. And you can follow me on Instagram with The Endurance Athlete. And we'll talk to you later. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Dan.